Listen and stream the all-new talk radio, Freedom 106.5, for the only talk that matter.
23 minutes after 7. As I said to you this morning, we have a special interview at this point in time. Last week, we had a raging discussion about amendments to legislation pertaining to CARICOM nationals and widening the scope of those who are allowed to come into the country and stay indefinitely and work. People had all different kinds of issues about it. And joining us this morning is a gentleman, served in the Ministry of Labour, served as a trade unionist, has always been looking on at labour issues in particular. And that, of course, is our special guest this morning, Kuba South MP Rajanath Indersingh. Good morning to you. Welcome to our program.
Good morning. Good morning to you, Satish, and good morning to your listening audience on Freedom 106.5 FM.
Haven't spoken to you in a while. It's nice to have you with us here this morning. Last week, when we were told by our Minister of Foreign and CARICOM Affairs of the amendments to the relevant legislation, it sparked a whirlwind of discussion. People saying all kinds of things, saying that, well, here at home, people catching the tail for jobs. Where are people coming from outside to get jobs? When people come here and they stay, can the country handle that increased demand on our resources? And a host of things. As somebody who has been involved, and I'm positive you've been looking on and paying attention to what's taking place with this development, let's get your summary. So we've come up to scratch with the legislation and our requirements. I think this was 14 years in the making. When we signed on to the documents that would have been under Patrick Manning, it has finally been effected by the Keith Rowley administration to allow a wider scope of CARICOM nationals into our shores and to come and work and to stay here indefinitely. Tell us your thoughts on that development.
Well, firstly, we were part of what we would call the CARICOM region, the Treaty of Chagaramas, and we have been committed to the creation of the CARICOM single market and the economy and so on. What it means now is that the act or the amendment to the act, which was the Immigration Caribbean Community Skills or Skill National Act of 2002, have been proclaimed, and what it means is now that there are 12 categories of workers instead of 5. The additional categories of eligible for a Caribbean single market and economy skills certificate are non-graduate nurses, non-graduate teachers, artisans with a Caribbean vocational qualification, what is called CVQ, household domestics with a Caribbean vocational qualification again, or for example agricultural and security workers. And it would take into consideration also barbers and beauticians, media workers and sports personnel and so on. Of course, the raging debate will continue to be one whether the level of unemployment in the country will be able to create a market, or will we have a market for those who will come from within the region seeking employment in Trinidad and Tobago. And this is one of the key issues that we will have to continue to monitor as a society. Because we must never forget that, I'm quoting from, I'm trying to recollect, but because I'm very familiar with, for example, the reports of the National Insurance Board of Trinidad and Tobago, which indicated in 2021 that over 131,000 persons were unemployed. And given the very situation with the COVID 19 pandemic and the fact that the economy has not fully recovered, there are those who will tell you that the unemployment rate in Trinidad and Tobago seem to be within or around the range of 175,000 persons and so on. I'm sure you may be very familiar with, given the fact that you are also involved in the news arrangements at Guardian Media and so on, that there was a recent report in the context of CNC 3 did where it indicated that we have had the highest unemployment rate in the country since 1980 and so on. So again, this backdrop, of course, persons will continue, that is, nationals will continue to ask the question whether there's room for me in the context of gaining employment, seeing now that there are persons from within the region who will come into our country seeking employment. At the end of the day, if you go back in history too, there have always been nationals from within the region, being employed in Trinidad and Tobago. But more importantly too, whilst this particular piece of legislation has been proclaimed and so on, we will continue to ask the question, has the government done the necessary market information survey, the manpower studies and so on coming out from the Ministry of Labour? The Minister of Labour seems to be very silent on this. And whether the gaps that have been identified within our economy is being linked to the Ministry of Planning and Development and the Ministry of Finance, so that there can be a holistic approach to the issue of addressing this question of the unemployment rate in Trinidad and Tobago.
Now, the figure that you quoted there, 170-something thousand people unemployed, those figures and those statistics, that information would come from persons who fall within the reporting mechanism. COVID-19 taught us that there are people who operate in a system that is outside of that established reporting mechanism, and that their jobs, whether they're employed or not, may not necessarily count in these statistics. But even at 170-something thousand, that's more than 10% of the population that is unemployed, according to the official statistics. So how do we, as a nation, weigh what we're being told? That we have, according to the official statistics, 10% of the population, probably even more, unemployed. But we're opening the gates for persons to come in and to fill voids that may not necessarily exist. Is the concern being expressed by people justified, or are we just being alarmist?
Well, as I said, we will continue to ask these questions, and persons are within their right to continue to ask, because we have to look at where, especially the small and medium-sized business enterprises in the country. You are quite right that we are now recovering from the COVID-19 pandemic, and against this backdrop of whether there was a thorough reporting mechanism, because this figure of 175,000 persons being unemployed could be beyond that, because the way the system is structured is that if a business sends home less than 5 persons, they are not obligated to report this to the Ministry of Labour and so on. And the bigger question will continue to be asked by nationals and so on. What has the government done in terms of employment creation and job creation in the country? Because this is a government that came to power since 2015 and committed itself towards the diversification of the economy and the creation of jobs. And I mean, when we were part of the government, we reported to the national community that we were able to create 56,000 jobs from a labor point of view, settle 135 negotiations and so on, in terms of our commitment to workers and the labor movement in Trinidad and Tobago. And even this raging debate now about what is being proposed by the Regulated Industries Commission, which seems to be really a done deal, because the Regulated Industries Commission being appointed by the cabinet is taking virtually political instruction from the cabinet of Trinidad and Tobago. For example, I'm using Amol. I am being told that, for example, Amol operator or owner, if the proposed rate increase is applied, mall owners may have to pay more than $1 million, $2, $3 million in terms of the proposed rate increases. This particular rate increase, it will be passed on to small and medium-sized business owners. And of course, that will lead to a further dent, or what should I say, the death knell of the revival, or what is being contemplated as it relates to the revival of the small and medium-sized business sector in this country. So again, we are facing a prevailing environment where we are not certain even how the proposed rate increase will, and I'm not talking about residential, but I'm talking from a commercial point of view, how it will impact upon the business community, how these costs will be passed onto the small and medium-sized business operators, and whether business operators will be able to sustain themselves, and will it lead to further closures and a further increase of the unemployment situation in Trinidad and Tobago. And I mean, we are committed as a country in the context of this piece of legislation within the framework of CARICOM and so on. But of course, nationals will continue to ask the question whether we will be squeezed out and so on. And with the lack of information, the lack of direction, the lack of communication coming from the government of Trinidad and Tobago, this will continue to be a raging debate, because we continue to hear about the creation of a unit within the Ministry of Trade and Industry, the Caribbean Single Market and the Economy unit and so on. The persons who come here, they will be, their passport will be stamped to be able to work for an indefinite period of 6 months and so on. Mm-hmm. And we must be told, from a monitoring mechanism point of view and so on, will these persons who come into Trinidad and Tobago within the framework of these 12 categories of workers, will they remain employed within these categories, or will they seek to move outside of these categories and become employed within the economy of the country? And yep, that is where the monitoring mechanism needs to be very rigid. And I think we need to be advised. And as I said, there's a lack of communication coming from the Minister of Foreign Affairs and also the Minister of Trade and Industry.
There's a discussion that's being had in the country that suggests the move, or the moves in relation to the Venezuelan migrant community, was intended at, yeah, assisting, you know, on a humanitarian level, but also providing a cheaper workforce for the country. And there are some, well, there were a couple of people who've been having the discussion and have suggested that this overture to implement the CARICOM agreements at this point in time is a continuation of that. And we had the discussion on the program a couple of days ago. I drew a personal experience. Just last night, I was looking at one of these discussions taking place on social media on a construction forum. And somebody said that they needed a laborer to mix concrete. And a couple people messaged saying that they're willing to take the job, but they ain't working for anything less than $500 a day. That's to mix concrete. They are not skilled to see. They ain't putting up a block. They ain't running a line. They ain't doing anything except mixing concrete. And they want to start at $500 a day. Now, when you have a migrant community like the Venezuelan community Let's take them, for instance. Let's not even consider CARICOM just yet. And in within the Venezuelan community, you have individuals there who say that they are willing to work for $200 a day. So whereas you get two people, two locals, to work for $1,000 a day, you can get five Venezuelans to do the very same job, because mixing concrete is not magic. It's not rocket science. And you get five people to do the job for the same price. Are locals pricing themselves out of jobs?
Well, again, that is a very realistic question that you have asked, and against the backdrop of any economy and any society where there is where there are persons who come in within your economy legally or illegally and so on. Persons will always, or the owners of capital, the business community, will always move towards. So an individual may make a decision about engaging someone because he or she wants to keep down their labor costs and their production costs and so on. We are duty bound in our responsibilities to ensure that migrant labor and even labor within the economy of Trinidad and Tobago is treated in a particular manner in terms of minimum labor standards and so on. We are part of the International Labor Organization. We are part of the Decent Work Agenda of Trinidad and Tobago, and there are laws within the framework of the country to uphold. And as I said, societies have been built upon the background or the input of migrant labor and non-migrant labor. And these are decisions that persons will have to continue to grapple with in the context of the prevailing economic environment.
Yeah, some pretty interesting things for us to grapple with. We need to take a couple quick messages. And when we get back, we'll open our phone line, 627-3223, 625-2257. We'll broaden the discussion. What has been taking place after COVID when it comes to labor? And we'll also look into some of the arrangements, some of the actions of the administration of the day in terms of dealing with wage negotiations, all that and more. Our special guest here this morning, Kuva South MP Rujanath Inder Singh. Stay with us.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.
Welcome back. Our special guest this morning, Kuva South MP Rujanath Inder Singh. Let's take some of your calls. 627-3223, 625-2257. Hello, good morning.
Good morning, sir. Good morning, Senator Bigwan. This is Richard Rima. And good morning to Mr. Inder Singh. Mr. Inder Singh, I know you have been a stalwart in the labor industry from ever since, union-wise. But you see, this thing can be one-sided. Well, Mr. Satish talk about, you know, you can't get a man mixing concrete and you want so much money. It, you know, according to the law, shop around, right? But what I'm saying, look at since 2015, Mr. Anderson, do you think that it's fair to public servants and public officers to be working at 2013 salaries? And is it enough for the government to say they have no money to pay, yet you see so much money being spent on other projects? And there's no fear. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Well, I think Satish, the caller, has raised the issue that you may want to have gone into in terms of the conversation here this morning. The government's treatment of labor, or its approach to workers and the labor movement, because we must never forget that this is a government that had signed, when they were in opposition, signed a joint memorandum of understanding with the labor movement prior to the general elections of 2015. And they touted themselves, they campaigned, they told the country that when elected, we will move towards settling all wage negotiations immediately. As the caller has rightly said, that public officers are working on 2012 and 2013 salaries. And the government has more or less ensured that the collective bargaining process has indeed collapsed. There is no intervention, really independence to it, because the prime minister, the minister of finance and so on, they have really hijacked the negotiating process, and there are matters that at the Industrial Court of Trinidad and Tobago, a special tribunal was established based on the fact that the government referred the majority of these negotiations there. And I mean, while not casting any aspersions about the judges at the Industrial Court and so on, the judges really do not have security of tenure. They are beholden to the cabinet in terms of the renewal of their contracts at the court and so on. And that begs the question whether the collective bargaining process is really independent and free and fair from political interference.
Let's take another call. Hello, good morning.
Good morning. I'm calling from Robasa Trace in Pinal. When you walk around Pinal, you see the line at the gas station has disappeared. You see a couple of doubles men disappearing. You go into the buildings. You don't have people bouncing up in the corridors, and businesses have disappeared. You can see that everything is down. Now, when you bring people who would occupy these kinds of positions, a hairdresser, housekeeper, somebody doing, these little lower-end jobs, first they have to rent, and then they have to find work. And I feel a lot of them will not get the work that they intended to do, or it might not last, because as I see it, we are continuing to decline. Now, this is going to give rise to all kinds of social problems and so on. People in that situation tend to do crazy things. So I have a lot of trepidation about this. I don't know what you are observing, Mr. Narasinghe, in Central Area. Thank you.
Well, I'm observing it all over the country in terms of, there has been an impact on in terms of migrant labor. More so from the Venezuelan point of view, they have been given another extension in the country. In addition to that, the issue of employers paying national insurance contributions and so on their behalf is another issue. And that is why we are saying, where is the... It's all well and good to have the legislation and so on, but where is the monitoring mechanism to ensure that persons who come into the country, they stay within the confines or the remit of the skill certificate that they were granted? And in addition to that, ensuring that they do not go beyond into other areas of employment. And then there's always the political dimension to this, because this is a government that you cannot trust. You have to always keep a hawk eye on them. You have to be very vigilant, because the PNM government, I will continue to say under Dr. Rowley, is a government that you cannot trust. And whether the persons may be entrenched in our country to be part and parcel of the voting mechanism and so on. This is a country where persons gain ID cards, they gain birth certificates, they gain driver's permits and so on. And when you ask how they came into the system, there are a lot of questions that needs to be answered.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning. Upper Rima here, Mr. Satish and Mr. MP. I agree with you, MP, I agree with you. And that is why I'm asking this question here this morning. The level of employment the others from the Caribbean would find here in Trinidad, would that same level of employment be offered to our Trinidad people? Are they really, we are in demand outside? Would it be fair play? Very simple. Would it be fair play? Or so far from the records, are Trinidadians, we really go across elsewhere to work in the Caribbean, or is only a one-way traffic and the motive behind it? Thank you very much, sir. Right,
thank you very much, Naferim. I mean, within the framework of the Caribbean single market and economy and CARICOM, we have that opportunity also. But it's a question of the size of the markets, the state of economies of countries within the region, and whether, as I said, against the COVID-19 pandemic, the contraction of the economies and so on within the region, are there the opportunities existing at this point in time? That will continue to be the raging debate, the ongoing debate. And this is the question or questions that will be continued, will continue to be asked by people in Trinidad and Tobago. For example, those who would have lost their jobs, whether at Carini, at PetroTrin, the seafood food industry returned from TSTT, UTT, and so on. I could go on and on in relation to this level of unemployment in the country.
Take another call. Hello, good morning.
Hello and good morning. Calling from DB. The federal thing, what I'm looking for is the figure. I don't know if you or the party could help me with this. The figure, what is the government rental figure per year in this country? And give us a little update on the steel mill and the refinery. Have a good day. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. I don't have what we might call updated figures as it relates to the rental of building by the government of Trinidad and Tobago, but that could be found with the appropriate research, because this is normally handled by the Ministry of Public Administration and so on. But what continues to be of concern to the country is the relationships and political relationships, and whether there's value for money in terms of the amount of buildings that are being rented by the government in these arrangement point of view. And at the end of the day, whether this could be reduced in terms of the burden on the taxpayers of Trinidad and Tobago. In relation to the refinery, the government has more or less reduced the Pointe à Pitre refinery to scrap iron, where there was recently an energy conference in Guyana. The Prime Minister, Dr. Rowley, went to Guyana and attempted to sell the idea or the relevance of the Pointe à Pitre refinery to the energy stakeholders, and apparently it has gained no traction. We must never forget that this is the same government that in the Parliament of Trinidad and Tobago, I could recollect Minister Imbert indicating that the company Patriotic Energies, which had a business relationship or which was an offspring of the Oilfield Workers Trade Union, was identified to be the preferred bidder in for the acquisition of the refinery about 3+ years ago. That was extended and extended and so on. And up till today, that has not become a reality. And you would ask yourself, why did the government take such a foolish decision to close down the PetroTrin refinery, given what we have seen unfolding within the energy sector or the development of an energy sector in Guyana, and how we could have benefited, piggybacked on this for the well-being of the refinery in Trinidad and Tobago. But again, the decisions of this government has not been really, over the last 8 years, have not really been in the avenue of economic development and national development. They continue to crash virtually every sector of this society. The Point Lisa's industrial estate is a shadow of itself, and the energy sector will continue to collapse under this government, in spite of all that they will come and peddle with Minister Young and the Prime Minister. Our Atlantic LNG, that train has collapsed. In addition to that, a number of the plants on the industrial estate have been mothballed and so on. and we have not been able to increase our oil production, our land exploration, and in terms of where we are with natural gas production, that is another issue. And given the budgeted price and the current price of natural gas, that has some serious implications for our revenue stream and delivering on the commitments that have been given by the government as it relates to its budget projections and so on, and its capital expenditure program for 2023.
Let's take another call. Take us up to the top news. Hello, good morning. Hello, good morning.
Hi, good morning. You and the MP, I'm calling from Central. I'm saying the thing, I don't know if you observe, you know, just as a passing Mary Johnson report, the land that was marked for Chamonix exodus, I saw where they burned down and there's a sign saying land for sale, even a piece in McLean. And I'm not hearing you all raising that issue in Parliament or trying to see what is going on. So what will happen to these ex-workers who that land was marked for them? No, it was, they are selling the land. I would like you all to talk about it because I'm not hearing nobody, you MP, opposition leader, anything raising that in Parliament, questioning the government about it. So these ex-family workers just sidelined here. Nobody now talking about it, representing them. All kind of issue, and you know, I mean, I don't mind you all when to take up the issue with the people in Forest Lane where they're putting all them for HBC apartment. What I'm saying, your supporters.
Okay, all right, ma'am. Thank you so much. I don't know if, the land and who's selling it and that kind of thing. You have information on that?
Well, I mean, the caller has raised a very relevant issue. I don't know whether the piece of land that she has alluded to was indeed state land or land of a private nature,
land. Mm-hmm.
Or land that was identified for the former employees of Carini 1975 Limited, because I know that there are a couple sites in and around the southern main road Coover that has been which I have been identified, Exchange 1, 2, Sunny Ladu and so on, and I continue to see people building houses on lands in the vicinity of even the Coover South constituency office and so on. The flip side to that is that where is the current situation, or what is the current status as it relates to the distribution of land for the ex-Carini workers from a residential and agricultural point of view? Because when the government came into power, the Prime Minister came to Central Trinidad, he said to give the PNM a chance.
Okay, MP, I'm going to have to interrupt you there because news is upon us. So I'll ask to continue your response. After the 8 o'clock news, we'll be taking some more calls. I want to delve into some of the issues related to COVID and unemployment statistics as well. So news is next. We're going to have to stick up in there. Of course, ladies and gentlemen, our special guest at this time, Coover South MP Rajanath Inder Singh. Stay with us.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.
Welcome back. Our special guest this morning, Coover South MP Rajanath Inder Singh. Just before we went to the break for the news, MP, you were giving a response to a question. You want to finish that before we continue?
Yeah, very quickly, because of some commitments I have from a medical point of view with my mother this morning, and also a parliamentary committee meeting. They committed themselves to follow through on the land distribution for the ex-Carini workers. The Prime Minister told the country, give the PNM a chance in Central and whatever is owed or was not followed through or completed with the ex-Carini workers would be done. They came in hot and sweaty. Clarence Rambaret, Minister of Agriculture, distributed leases that was not distributed when we were voted out of office, probably within the first year. This is their 8 year in the office. And they distributed some, and then they stopped the entire process. And in fact, they have taken or a number of the contractors who were engaged by the EMBDC in the development of these sites to the courts of Trinidad and Tobago, and the land distribution has been stopped. And this is the playbook of the PNM. You must remember when Kearney was closed, and sometimes it is good to remind those who have failed to take their agitation outside of the office of the Prime Minister, Dr. Rowley, or outside of the Ministry of Agriculture in terms of Minister Hussein. I say there are those who are embracing Minister Hussein, but they forgot that between 2003 and 2010, the PNM did not distribute one single lease from an agricultural or residential point of view. When Justice J.L. Singh ruled in favor of the union and the workers, it is the PNM government of Patrick Manning that appealed the matter all the way to the Privy Council. It was the administration of Prime Minister Bisesa that lifted the injunction on this matter, the Privy Council, which began the development works on or the infrastructural works on the land for these workers. And during our tenure, which was a work in progress, we distributed over 5,000 of the agricultural leases and 3,000 of the residential leases. We did not complete the job. We were voted out of office. And we must be able to do a comparison of what administrations have been done in terms of Dr. Rowley's administration versus Kamala Prasad Bisesa's administration.
Let's take another call before we get your closing comments. Hello, good morning.
Good morning, Satish, and good morning to the MP. Well, MP, I hear the UNC appointed some lawyers to see about the people in Port of Spain. The Mondays here. You see, helping them people, that deceitful people, don't help them. Them vote for the PNM. Don't help them. Rowley tell them he moving them. Lady man move them. Because if UNC help them, in the next election, they may vote for UNC, you know. Them running for the PNM, boy. That inside them. Leave them people right there. It's how UNC people want help. Help UNC people. Leave them people there. You don't get nothing from them for that. Them people, you know. They may get, you're getting nothing from them people, you know. I go on Mondays here.
Oh, thank you so much for your call. I mean, I know that time is against us this morning with your other commitments. As we wrap up, we've been seeing some convulsions taking place within the labor fraternity and on a labor front. When it comes to trade unions seeking increases and the government putting up a brick wall as to this is what we can't afford, take it or leave it. And the cost of living continues to increase. There are some trade unions whose members are operating on 2013 salaries. That's the last time they got a raise. What are your predictions for the labor sector in the not-too-distant future?
Well, I hope that the labor movement can revive its glory days that we were accustomed to in this country in terms of agitating for the membership, the poor, the downtrodden, and the oppressed, and find its voice not only from a collective bargaining point of view, but to address some of the social ills that are plaguing the society, the rate of unemployment, the crime. The proposed rates by the Regulated Industry Commission, which will have a further impact upon the cost of living and so on in this country. This is the critical role of the labor movement, and the only thing that seems to be a buffer between this government and what is unleashing on the people of Trinidad and Tobago is the United National Congress. We continue to speak out on the issues. We will do so in and outside of the parliament of this country. And before I end, Satish, this is a very important period in our country from the point of view of, we have only yesterday, we observed Pagua, we're in the middle of the Lenten period. Also, we are on the eve of Ramadan. And also, we will observe Baptist Day in Trinidad and Tobago by the end of this month. So I want to take the opportunity on behalf of our political leader and all our colleagues in the United National Congress to extend our best wishes and our religious greetings to the respective religious denomination as we continue to do our role in building a better Trinidad and Tobago, because the United National Congress has been a party that all has always stood on the side of the people, the labor movement, and for peace, bread, justice, and equality in this country.
MP, that's where we're going to drop it. I know that you have other commitments that you need to get to, and I thank you for taking your time this morning to speak to us. We'll speak again in the not-too-distant future. Thank you once again for being with us here this morning.
Thank you very much, and I know for a fact that Freedom 106.5 was launched recently, or reformatted and relaunched, and I remain at your disposal in terms of addressing the critical issues on behalf of the people of this country. Thank you once again.
Yeah, much appreciated. Thank you so much. That's where we drop the curtains on this interview with Kuba South MP Rudy Indersing.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.